The Subcommittee of on Transportation and Economic Development is Wednesday, March the 19th, 2003. And at this time, I'm going to open as a subcommittee of the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development and an informational meeting on the Oregon Lottery Commission. And Robin, you had two things to tell us.
Just one thing, actually, Mr. Chair, and that just to remind folks that tomorrow morning at 9, we will briefly convene a meeting for the purposes of allowing Sandy Cutler to make a presentation on small business development centers, since he's unable to be here during the time that the budget would be heard in economic development. And just to emphasize, it's from 9 to 9:15. It's a very brief meeting.
When you're ready, go ahead and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brenda Rocklin, the director of the Oregon Lottery. I was appointed interim director last December, was confirmed by the Oregon Senate on February 14th, and have then been at the lottery for about 3 months now. We very much appreciate the opportunity to appear before you this morning. What I'm hoping to discuss with the committee is to set out for you the lottery's mission statement and our organizational structure, talk about key constitutional changes that have occurred over the year, most recently in 2002, particularly as those changes relate to the distribution of lottery funds. Also intend to talk about the games that have been developed at the Oregon Lottery over the years, the Oregon gaming market, particularly lottery share as it relates to Indian casinos, and also talk about sales trends both for the Oregon Lottery and other U.S. lotteries. I hope to talk about revenue and expense distribution as it relates both to traditional lottery games and video lottery, talk about the lottery's administrative expenses. One of those components is retailer compensation, and I intend to spend a little bit of time on that particular part of our administrative expenses. Also like to talk about the budget process that the Oregon Lottery and the Oregon Lottery Commission go through each year, and all of you should have a handout that is a draft of our 2004 proposed budget, and I'd like to go over that with the committee members this morning as well. And finally, I hope to talk briefly about our problem gambling education and treatment program. And if we have a chance, I'd also like to talk about the audits that the Oregon Lottery has gone through during the past biennium, some more controversial than others, but we have had a number of both external and internal audits that I hope to get to. The lottery's mission statement is set out on the slide. It's a mission statement that was approved by the Oregon Lottery Commission, and it really has three key components. One, to operate the Oregon Lottery with integrity and security. Second, to earn maximum profits for the people of Oregon, and that in doing so, we earn those maximum profits commensurate with the public good. And the mission statement at the Oregon Lottery really parallels the statutory requirement in ORS 461-200, which pretty much sets out the same goals and expectations for the Oregon Lottery. In terms of organization, the Oregon Lottery is run by a five-member commission. Those commission members are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Oregon Senate. One of the commission members must be an individual with at least 5 years' experience in law enforcement. One of the other commission members must be a CPA. No more than three of the commission members can come from the same political party. The director of the Oregon Lottery is also a position appointed by the governor of Oregon and confirmed by the Senate. I am the sixth director of the Oregon Lottery. There, by constitution and by statute, the director and the commission are authorized to appoint up to four assistant directors. The four assistant director positions at the Oregon Lottery are security, That is currently a position that's filled by Lieutenant Tim Steiner, who's been a member of the Oregon State Police for the past 24 years. The Assistant Director for Marketing is a position that has been vacant for the past 3 years, but Carol Bono is our marketing manager who has been essentially fulfilling that function, and Carol has been a member, has been at the Oregon Lottery for the past 15 years. Assistant Director for Retail Operations is Will Higlin. He has been in that position for the past 6 years and has been a member of the Oregon Lottery for the past 14 years. And our most recent Assistant Director is Colleen Seelock, who is performing the role of Support Services. She's been at the lottery now for 11 days. Some of you may know Colleen from her days as Deputy Director at DAS, Deputy Director of Operations at DAS, performing largely the same function at the Oregon Lottery as Assistant Director of Support Services. All of those senior staff members are here today if there are specific questions that should be directed in those four areas. And Kathy Ortega, the Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon Lottery, is also here as well today. This next slide just sets out in more detail the distribution of the employees at the Oregon Lottery. We currently have 409 full-time positions. In addition to that, there are 24 Oregon State Police officers whose job is security at the Oregon Lottery, both at the building in Salem and throughout the state of Oregon. We're down a number of FTEs from last year. You'll see in our business plan that last year's FTE was 415, so we're down a few positions from that. And this chart really sets out where the various positions operate. I guess 2 points I would make about the number of FTEs at the Oregon Lottery. We're obviously a large state agency. That's one reason for the number of FTEs. But the other thing I would let the committee know is that we also operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to be able to carry out our functions at the Oregon Lottery so that we have hotline operators and computer operators and security available 24 hours a day to be able to run our games and make sure that the security and integrity at the lottery is intact. As the committee knows, the Oregon Lottery was created by a vote of the people in 1984. 66% of the voters favored creating an Oregon Lottery, and at that point in 1984, 100% of lottery funds were dedicated to economic development. In 1995, by legislative referendum, the people amended the Oregon Constitution to add the financing of public education as a permissible use of lottery funds, and at that point dedicated 15% of the net revenue to what was known at that time as the Education Endowment Fund. In 1997, again by legislative referendum, the public approved spending $150 million in school bonds. In 1998, by initiative, voters approved spending 15% of net lottery revenues for parks and natural resources. And then most recently, in the fall of 2002, the Oregon public changed the Education Endowment Fund to the Education Stability Fund and changed the percentage from 15 to 18%. In terms of how the breakdown occurs in light of the constitutional changes that have occurred over the years, in terms of 2001 and 2003 biennium, 50% goes to public education, 15% to the Education Endowment or Stability Fund, 15% to Parks and Natural Resources, and then 10% both to economic development and payment on bond debt. And for those of you who want to see the kind of the actual dollar breakdown for the last most current biennium, those are the figures and where the money is actually going.
Mm-hmm. Senator Dukes?
My memory must be faulty. It seemed to me that under the Kitzhaber administration, the legislature put something on the ballot that dedicated a larger amount of money to K-12. Am I wrong? I'm looking at 50% that goes to public education, and then there's the Education Endowment Fund, but I thought it was separate from the Education Endowment Fund. Or are we just choosing to say that education is economic development and therefore it gets that much in?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, there are two things in that $332 million. One is the Education Endowment Fund. The other is direct lottery funds that we allocate to the state school fund.
And it's us making a decision, not the voters. I just sworn we put something on the ballot that dedicated a large chunk of lottery to K-12.
I think you're thinking about the 1995 referendum that allowed that created education as an allowable purpose for the use of lottery funds, but I don't believe that there's ever been a dedication in excess of the 15%, which will now become 18%.
Okay, no, I remember that. Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to just talk briefly about the games that have developed over the years at the Oregon Lottery. That the Oregon Constitution authorizes the state lottery to really operate any game procedure authorized by the Lottery Commission using any future or existing technology, with three exceptions. One, we cannot operate parimutuel racing, social games, or what's known as bingo or lotto. But over the years, the Lottery Commission has authorized the games you see on the left-hand side of the column. In addition to that, the Oregon legislature has also authorized the Oregon Lottery to operate two other types of games. One, sports action by legislative enactment in 1989, and video lottery in 1992. And actually, the video lottery statute was earlier than that, but it actually became operational in 1992. One of the points I want to make, because it'll be present throughout the rest of my presentation today, is that really on the left-hand side of the column, and even sports action, those are the types of game that are really referred to as traditional lottery games that are treated differently really for just about every purpose. And video lottery really is going to stand alone, as we talk about really the rest of the slides this morning. So they're two different things. That the revenue, prize disbursements, everything looks different depending on whether we're talking video lottery or traditional lottery games. So those are the distinctions I'll be making throughout the rest of my presentation this morning. In terms of Oregon's gaming market share, just quickly, I wanted to let the committee know that we're really taking a look at this in terms of 1995 and 2000, because those are the most recent figures we have available. But this slide simply shows that in terms of a gaming market share, lotteries share decreased from 67% in 1995 to 58% in 2000. Largely the result of a growth in Indian casinos between those two dates. And in terms of this particular slide, the category other really refers to social gaming, internet gaming, and illegal gaming. Those three areas are picked up in the other category. In terms of sales trends, if the committee could focus on the bottom graph initially, what that shows is that if you take a look at the year 1993, there was really a kind of a spike in sales in all U.S. lotteries. Probably a number of reasons for that. One, Powerball launched in April of 1992. 5-Minute Keno came into existence around the country at about that same time. And then there were also a number of new states who started lottery games in the early 1990s. You then see, after 1993, really a flattening across the country of lottery sales growth. Again, probably largely the result of the fact that Indian casino gambling started to increase at about that same period of time, and resulting in the lottery sales across the country really flattening out starting in 1995. The interesting thing about the top graph, though, for Oregon is that if you take a look at starting in 1992, you see that's the year we launched video lottery. And then sales have just generally continued to increase as you look over the course of the next few years. And that's particularly true if you start looking at the year 2000 on up. There's been a gradual sales growth in Oregon. In large part, that's the result of the fact that our video lottery sales have continued to increase and to exceed sales projection over those past 3 years. And one of the things we found, and that I'll talk a little bit more about shortly, is that as the prize percentages have increased with video lotteries, our sales have increased. And that graph really represents the fact that things have not flattened out in Oregon, even though they have in the rest of the country. In the next two slides, this one dealing with traditional lottery games, the next one dealing with video lottery, what we're really trying to show is just a rough percentage of, for every dollar that goes into a traditional lottery game or every dollar that goes into a video lottery game, where does the money go in terms of expenses and revenue? And this slide simply shows you that in terms of the prize payout percentage for traditional lottery games is 66.4% as an average. That prize payout percentage is an amount that the Oregon Lottery Commission has set to be an appropriate amount. They have said that it's appropriate to have the amounts vary by product, and have set the range at between 50 and 70% as a payout percentage. And so you can see the 66.4% is within the range set by the Oregon Lottery Commission. In terms of traditional games, 17.6% is actually then transferred back to the state. In terms of a transfer, you see a percentage for retailer compensation, which is one of our administrative expenses, of 8.8%. And then game expenses, the amount we have to pay for vendor charges and for things like tickets, and then our operating expenses at 4%.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Can you take a moment and talk about the correlation between prize payout percentage and net income to the Oregon Lottery? If the Oregon Lottery was to decrease, what is the impact? If the lottery was to increase the payout percentage, what is the impact?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I'm not sure I can give you precise numbers on that. What has happened in a number of states, though, when legislatures have looked for a way to generate money, is to have lotteries decrease prize payout percentages, particularly in the area of traditional lottery games. And what has happened then is there's been a marked decrease almost immediately in terms of sales. So that to decrease the percentages has actually worked to not have revenue return to the state at the same rate. So
I guess I was under the understanding, Mr. Chair, that when you actually increase the percentage of payout to those purchasing a ticket using the system, the amount of revenue that comes into the state actually increases.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that has certainly been very true with video lottery. As that's what I was saying, is when the prize percentage has gone up with video lottery, revenues have gone up as well.
I just very quickly. Perfect. I'd be very interested in, outside of this forum, receiving information on where is equilibrium. At what point do we hit that point where we've maximized the percentage of payout and the rate of return to the state.
Okay. Thank you.
We're also, I know we're going to get to it later, but right now, while we're looking at this graph, I think it would be helpful for everyone to have a picture of what is the gross revenue at this as we look at distribution. Total sales. No, because we're talking about distribution of everything right here, aren't we?
No,
these are
traditional.
This is traditional games only.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, maybe because everybody's got the handout in front of them, I think, in terms of our draft budget for 2004, this is pretty, you'll see the 2003 approved budget, our current projections as of December, and then our 2004 draft. Mm-hmm. That'll give you a sense, I think, of the various lottery games and the breakout in terms of the total revenue, mm-hmm. the prizes, and then the net revenue. Maybe that's the easiest way to actually have the numbers before you.
Great. Thank you.
Go to the next. Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, this next slide, I think, kind of gives you a sense, too, in terms of the difference in prize payout percentage that we're using with video lottery. It's obviously quite a bit higher than it is with the traditional lottery, the 93.8% at this point. As I've said, that has resulted in increased sales in the video lottery area. The Lottery Commission, and you'll see this in our strategic plan, which we've given you as a handout, but the Commission has set the prize payout percentage to be between a range of 89% to 97% for video lottery. And you can see, again, that we're within that range at the current time. And, again, this slide shows that the transfer for the state for video lottery is 3.4%. Retailer compensation 2%, and then our other game expenses and operating expenses all occupy a small piece of the pie in terms of this particular slide.
Senator Dukes,
what's the payout? The average payout at the casinos,
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes. I think, let me just confirm with Lieutenant Steiner, but I think it's a little bit less than that.
Around between
85 and 95.
I always heard it was better.
In the last two slides, we talked a little bit about the percent of transfer to the state of Oregon. This slide shows that in terms of fiscal year 2003, this is the amount that we expect to transfer to the state of Oregon, and it's a total of $369.1 million just during fiscal year 2003. So we're not talking about a biennium at this point, but just during the fiscal year 2003. 73% of that figure comes from our video lottery sales, 17% from traditional lottery product sales, and then the final 10% comes from two other areas. One of those areas is unclaimed prizes. The other area is administrative savings. And let me just talk briefly about those two areas. One, I have actually good news in the area of unclaimed prizes. One of the things that you'll see in the May forecast is an additional $1.1 million in unclaimed prizes that will then be turned back to the state of Oregon. That's the result of an unclaimed Powerball jackpot, I believe out of the state of Indiana, and that's going to be Oregon's share of that, plus another large unclaimed traditional lottery prize in Oregon that was never claimed during the time period, and all of that money then goes back to the state of Oregon. In terms of administrative savings and that additional money that is returned to the state of Oregon, that's really made up of three categories. One, any profits that exceed the predetermined transfer rate go into the category of administrative savings. And a good example of that is any time our video sales exceed expectations, that money is then going to go into administrative savings and ultimately be transferred to the state of Oregon. The other thing that makes up administrative savings is any time the Oregon Lottery saves money in terms of its expenses, that is money then that is returned to the category of administrative savings and ultimately then goes to the state. And another good example of that is an action that the Lottery Commission took last month at its monthly meeting, and we had $3.2 million set aside for a building remodel at the Oregon Lottery. We've made the decision that that money is not going to be spent, so the commission approved returning that money to the administrative savings, and then ultimately will be returned to the people of Oregon. And the other category that makes up administrative savings would be any contingency reserve transfers that occur, and a number of those have occurred over the past biennium. And the bottom line is that since 1985, the Oregon Lottery has transferred $99.8 million in administrative savings to the state of Oregon. I now want to spend a few minutes talking about the lottery's administrative expenses, and we break down administrative expenses really into two categories: direct, that relate specifically to the games we operate, and then indirect administrative expenses. The Lottery Commission has given us a target in terms of administrative expenses, and the target is that we're not to exceed 4%. And both in fiscal year 2003 and projected into fiscal year 2004, our administrative expenses are projected to be 3.1%, which is considerably below the 16% limitation that's set by the Oregon Constitution. Our direct administrative expenses are really composed primarily of three areas: retailer commissions, game expenses, and again, game expenses are things like vendor charges, leases that we pay on video lottery terminals, printing costs for scratch-it tickets, those type of items. And then a smaller category of advertising and sales support. Our indirect expenses are largely composed of salaries and benefits for employees at the Oregon Lottery. Other expenses really is a category of services and supplies. That's also the category where we have a contract with the Oregon State Police, which is provided for by Oregon statute that we contract with the Oregon State Police, and that's where that expense would show up as well. And finally, our indirect administrative expense is a category of public information. That's really where we set aside funds to educate the public about problem gambling and how they can obtain treatment and information about that particular area. And it's also an area where we set aside funds to actually educate the public on where lottery dollars go. It's our Oregon Wins campaign where we let the public know where the lottery dollars are being spent.
Question from Representative Smith and then Senator Carter.
Thank you, Chair George. Under your advertising and sales support, I turned into your business plan, and I see that a portion of your money goes to community affairs. Could we have somebody provide this committee with a breakdown of the sponsorship of community-based activities and in what communities and what type of events those are to see where throughout the state?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, we'll certainly do that as a breakdown there. Let me, I'll get to this later if we get to the audit issues, but just in case I don't get there, let me follow up a little bit on that. We currently, you'll see in our budget documents in the business plan that we really have money set aside for community relation programs in two areas. One is in the advertising and marketing area, and we will get you the list of sponsorships there in detail and the money that was spent and where it was spent. We've also, though, in the past have had a community relations program in our services and supplies budget that is a program that is currently under evaluation, largely because of a recommendation by the Secretary of State in our administrative expense audit that's a program that we should take a look at. And we're in the process of taking a look at that, not just in that particular line item, but also in the advertising area as well, to make sure that any of the money that's spent on those particular areas is money that we can really justify as an appropriate expenditure of lottery dollars. So it is a program that's under evaluation. And I think in terms of the line item under services and supplies, and it's been $125,000 per year, that is a program that I've already determined will not continue into fiscal year 04, into that budget.
My concern, Chair George, or the reason I raised the question is I just want to make sure that these sponsorships are getting into all parts of Oregon, into the inner cities and into the most remote rural parts of Oregon, if that is going to continue.
Senator Carter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning.
I first of all want to start off by giving you compliments about charitable support and community involvement. I think the lottery has done a good job about that. I think it certainly begs a question that Senator Representative Smith is just asking in terms of that. So my compliments on that.
Thank you.
My concern is gambling addiction. When we started the lottery back in 1984, we were contemplating it as far back as 1984 and 85 and looking at other states in terms of gambling addiction, which was a grave concern for me to even bring the lottery into Oregon. And so I want to know, number one, what do we stack up in terms of other states in terms of gambling addiction? And number two, how successful are we being at dealing with the issue here in terms of not only support services, but monies that I see $7 million had been allocated for that and the effective use of those dollars? And if you haven't gotten there yet, I don't mind waiting until you get there.
Or I don't know how easy it is to jump.
Thank you.
Okay, all right.
That's my question.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, I'll make certain that we get there because we do have a slide, and I think that's certainly been an area that I think the Oregon Lottery is pretty proud of, so I do want to get to that and answer your question, and we will do that before the end of our presentation today. Because it is the largest component of our administrative expenses, I do want to spend a few minutes talking about retailer commission rates. And again, let me begin with the traditional lottery, because the commission rates vary considerably in terms of the way they're set up, depending on whether we're talking about traditional lottery products such as scratch-it tickets, Keno, those type of things, versus video lottery. So the first slide you're looking at really sets out the way that retailers are compensated for selling Oregon's lottery products for traditional products. It's a sliding scale based on gross sales. And this is the rate structure that's been in place since the contracts were renegotiated in 1998. One of the things that the Oregon Lottery did before it negotiated the contracts in 1998 was to commission a study by a group called KPMG to actually give us some information in terms of both traditional retailer commission rates and lottery commission rates and what would be an appropriate percentage to be paid. that independent study concluded that a commission rate for traditional lottery games between 6 and 10% would be reasonable. And as you can see, we've set the rate between 5 and 10% for traditional lottery games. The projected commission rate for fiscal year 2003 is that $29.5 million will be paid to our retailers who sell traditional lottery products. In terms of video lottery, as I said, it's really a different structure. Going back really to 1992 when we first started video lottery, but then reevaluated in 1998 when we redid the contracts with our retailers. By law, the Oregon Lottery is required to pay our contractors a reasonable rate of return. And under the current contract, we've come up with a four-tier compensation schedule to pay our video retailers. And as I said, this is the compensation structure that's been in place since 1998. The current contract expires in June 2004. And again, before we entered into the most recent contract, we did get information, as I've said, from the KPMG study group. At that time, we had a two-tiered structure in place, and it's the top two tiers that are represented on the slide, 35% and 30%. The study recommended that it may be appropriate to move the compensation rate closer to a composite rate of 30%. And at the time of the study, the average compensation rate was 33.5. As you see from the slide, the average video commission rate is now 31.9, so we've moved closer to that 30% mark. One of the ways that the study recommended that we could get there to move closer to an average compensation rate of 30% was to add one or two more tiers, and so that's what was done in 1998, and that's when the 25% and the 20% tier came in.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. I apologize to the committee for all the questions. I just find this intriguing. If you were to move to a straight 30%, what would the impact be on your smaller community retailers who aren't going to be in the 600,000 range but are in the up to 200,000 range? What would be the impact to them? And has any discussion gone on to find out how it would impact them? I get the reason I raise that is obviously you're going to take their compensation from 35 to 30%, a decrease of 5%, and anyone who's financed food consumer, alcohol consumer-based businesses will tell you their mortgage is paid based upon this check coming in every month. And so I'd be interested in knowing what's the impact on our small little communities if we reduce that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, obviously when you take a look at the tiers and you look at the top tier in the sense of the 35% tier, the vast majority of our retailers are in that tier. It's, you know, almost 57% are getting an average compensation rate of $32,000 a year. Making a change at that particular level is obviously going to have an impact across the board on those particular retailers. And you're absolutely right. There are many of those retailers who have kind of, I guess, banked on that being the return rate. In terms of a dollar figure, I think we could get back to you on that, but I don't have a dollar figure in my head today to say what would it be if we went to 30% at that upper tier. It's obviously just going to have a big impact on most of our retailers because that's where they are. And when you get down to the upper limit, the 20% compensation rate, you know, obviously high dollar figures there. I don't think any question about that, but very few, you know, fewer than 7% of our retailers are up at that top level.
I guess I just asked to be you folks to be sensitive to the fact that your small retailers throughout all of Oregon, whether they're in downtown Portland or on the coast or where have you, are dependent upon that income. And a reduction in that is going to have a dramatic impact on Main Street.
Representative Hanson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions. On the average compensation on the at the $32,000 level, does that include a deduction for retailer expenses, the phone lines, and or is that their net, their gross compensation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, it does not include the phones, any of those expenses.
So there is a chunk of expenses that come out for being a retailer, and some of it would vary, I'm sure, based on how much, whether they dedicate an employee to working, but even
certainly.
There's certainly a minimum expense that would probably be the same whether you're operating at $32,000 or whether you're getting $219,000 in compensation. And we need to be aware of that. The other question is, when you're talking about retailers, the retailers, when you say 143 retailers in that top amount, is that 143 individual locations, or does that account for people with multiple locations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, that is 143 establishments. So some of those establishments will, in fact, be owned by the same individual or the same corporation or partnership.
That might be helpful in terms of understanding a little where the how the total flow, if there's a handful of locations that are generating those top numbers, but they're in common ownership. It gives you a little different idea of where who's making the money off the lottery.
To me, Mr. Chairman, like the establishments are hurting.
Say again?
It doesn't appear to me as if the establishments are hurting.
Mr. Chairman, I was concerned by your last slide because it appeared that the more revenue you brought in, in other words, the higher the sales, the better the profits. But I'm impressed with this. We can discuss percentages and all that, but that's not the case here. And with Senator Carter's question about addiction, this is the one that we have the biggest addiction problem with. And there clearly is not, I mean, there's an incentive because the numbers go up dramatically, but there's not a percentage incentive to be out there lining the walls with video poker. And I appreciate that.
That's a good point. That's a real good observation.
I guess any other questions about retailer compensation? What I want to do now is spend a few minutes really going through with the committee how the Oregon Lottery goes through its budget process. We're actually on a yearly budget process, and we're kind of in the process right now of putting together our 04 budget. So I thought it might be helpful to go through how the process works so you have an understanding of that, and then actually to talk, we have put together a draft 04 budget that has not been approved by the commission, and you'll kind of see that we haven't gotten to that part of the process yet, but I think it'll give you a pretty good idea of what our 04 budget will look like and where there'll be some increases, where there'll be some decreases, and I'll go through that after I go through the process. But essentially what happens during the process is you all should have a business plan and a strategic plan in front of you. Those are documents that are used by the lottery and by the commission kind of throughout the year. And early on in the budget process, we will review the plans that have been put together for the past year and our performance measures, and you'll see the performance measures that are set out in those two plans that are before you, we actually take a review to see how well we did during the past year and if we need to make some adjustments and really kind of analyze where we need to go next. The next thing that the Lottery Commission does is actually take a look at the strategic plan that was developed the prior year, discuss that, and then make any changes to it. That's actually a process that the Lottery Commission will go through this coming Friday following its regular commission meeting, where the commission members and key lottery staff will sit down, go through the strategic plan, and make kind of broad decisions and set forth performance measures on where we want to be during the course of the coming year. After the strategic plan is finalized, we then put together the other document that's before you in terms of a business plan, a marketing plan, and a financial plan. The financial plan is obviously going to include our budget so that we have performance measures and standards to measure against during the coming year. One of the things we do then, too, throughout the course of the year to stay on track is that we put together project plans in terms of all of the projects that are identified in our various business and marketing plans so that we set target dates that need to be set during the course of the year and who's going to perform particular functions, and we make sure that we stay on track in terms of those particular projects. The other thing we do on a monthly cycle is to review the budget and see if there are any variances to the budget and where they are, and present that information to the commission at its monthly commission meeting. And one of the documents we've given you is a packet of our financial report that will go to the commission this coming Friday, and then the chief financial officer will go over with the commission members where we're over in the budget, give them an explanation on why we're over in a particular budget item or why we're not, if there are any variances at all in the budget. And then the commission will actually approve those particular variances at its commission meeting once a month. As I've said, during the course of putting the various plans together for the upcoming year, we do develop measurements, and you'll see those in both our business plan and our strategic plan in goals and expectations that we intend to meet during the coming year. Before the business, marketing, and financial plans are approved by the commission, the plans are submitted to the governor for his review and comment. And then finally, the plans and the budget for the coming year are approved by the Lottery Commission, and those are then the plans that all of us operate off of at the Oregon Lottery. What I'd next like to do is to just make a couple comments about our fiscal year 2004 draft or preliminary budget that all of you have before you. It's not a budget, as I've said, that's been approved by the commission, but it is based on a lot of work by lottery staff in putting together the 04 budget. And I guess want to make a couple comments about that and then invite you to ask me any questions you may have about our budget. What we've set out for you is in the first column is the fiscal year 03 approved budget. Is that, yes,
yes,
Mr. Chair, it's this one-page document that all of you should have before you. Then three columns. So the first column represents the fiscal year 03 budget that was actually approved by the Lottery Commission and the various line items. The next column is really where we are as of December 31st, at the end of the year, so that you can actually get a sense of where we're over, where we're under in terms of the budget from 03, which is, again, information that we've used in figuring out our 04 draft budget. In terms of total revenue. You'll see all of our various games listed. The total revenue goes up in 04 from what it was approved in 03, although down somewhat from the projection in the middle column. Total revenue is again up from the 03 approved budget, but again down somewhat from what we project is going to be the end of the year of 03. In terms of expenses, you see the commission rates don't vary too much from where we are right now and what we're projecting for 04. Game vendor charges is a line that I did want to bring to your attention and give you an explanation for that. You see in 03 we had an approved budget of roughly $12 million. We're down to about a little over $9 million in the 04 draft budget. The reason for that is that our expectation will be that lease payments for a number of the video lottery terminals will not be a payment we'll be making because we're in the process of trying to purchase video lottery terminals. So to the extent we do that, the lease payments will decrease, and that's what you're seeing in that particular line item.
Ownership versus leasing means what? The ownership of the terminal.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, it's a matter of whether we pay a monthly lease payment to a vending company to actually have the machine out there or whether we actually pay money up front to actually purchase the machine.
And is there savings that you see there? Or
I think in terms of a long-term saving, yes.
That's saying yes, okay. Thank you.
I mean, that's...
Oh, excuse me.
Oh, no, go ahead. I'm done.
Okay. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. In your indirect expenses, I turn to this handout to get a little more detail, and it lists depreciation. Depreciation is a non-cash expense. Where does that money go?
Stephanie, I'm going to need you to answer that.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Kathy Ortega, Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon Lottery. You're correct, that is a non-cash expense, or it's an expense that generates cash for our balance sheet. It goes into cash, and then if you're looking actually at the balance sheet.
Operating statement.
Okay. If you could flip to the page that's balance sheet, I think it's page 6 or 7, that goes into our balance sheet, and then if it isn't expended, it would become part of our equity or our contingency reserve as we cycle through the year.
But it goes into the
cash. It goes into cash. And, you know, as we execute our plans, we may have some capital expenditures that we may need to make. We may need to replace some equipment. We may need to do some things with that money, in which case it might become earmarked for expenses, and then if not, it becomes part of equity, which is part of the contingency reserve.
Director, are there any providers of equipment that actually manage the day-to-day maintenance of those systems? Are there anyone who offers that option? Or they're leasing you the machine and show you how to do it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Will Higlin. I'm the Assistant Director for Retail Operations. The question about vendors providing service on our traditional side of our business, the Megabucks, what we call the red machine in our business that's in the stores that sell Megabucks, Powerball, Keno. We have a vendor that actually services that equipment. On the video lottery side, when the video lottery program was established, the leadership at that time elected to keep that in-house, and so we have our own service department that services all the video equipment.
That video support and the...
Yes, it is. Some of it's video support, and some of it would be in the field staff. There's kind of two elements there in the FTE count. Your question was, are there other vendors that would that provide that type of service? I think the answer is probably yes, but I couldn't tell you specifically that in X jurisdiction they do it now, but I think there would probably be some interest if we ever went out and asked for that service to be contracted out.
Has that ever been explored as to whether there would be savings to do that?
Mr. Chairman, not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge.
So if you did not have that service, how long would it take? Well, I was in Aruba not so long ago, and I played the video lottery, and I won, I think, $160, something like that. But the owner could not go into the machine. They had to call somebody to come. And it's also the case in Eastern City as well, because they don't want, I guess, the hands dirty in terms of whether they're really reporting right. So if you didn't have that service in-house, does that mean that you have to call somebody to come in and service that machine and people, if they're waiting for that to happen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, I'm not actually tracking exactly your question.
Let me tell you what happened to me, maybe that's Mr. Chairman. I wanted my little $160 on the machine. And the machine, something happened to it. And they don't have, the lottery commission did not have an in-house service person. They had to call for somebody else to come and give me my little $160. And it took them 3.5 hours to get there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, in our situation, that potentially could happen, but what we do is train our retailers, so our retailers are responsible for paying the prizes, and they do have some technical support. We offer hotline services, so if an issue happens on site, they call our hotline staff, and we'll work them through issues. We solve about 70% of the problems over the phone. If we can't, then we might have to dispatch one of our service technicians to the location, but the payment of the prizes actually comes from the retailer, not the lottery, with the video lottery system. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. And we have another question, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair George. Let me actually begin by saying thank you so much for giving us financial statements that are readable. This is the first budget I've seen where I can actually read through these and understand what's going on. On the balance sheet, under the accounts payable, can you talk a little bit about how you try and purchase Oregon First, or is that not possible? The question I have is I'm assuming there's a lot of contractual work that has to be done, everything from advertising and marketing to the construction of a little ticket to the machines. Are there Oregon-based companies to do this? Is there an ethics issue why there is an Oregon-based company doing this? I'm just curious, who's producing all this? Who are our contracts with?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, to my knowledge, and there would be some other experts in this field, but in my knowledge, when you talk about the big things about manufacturing of terminals, the printing of instant tickets, there is nobody within Oregon that actually runs that type of business. So when we go out for our general RFPs and things like that, if people are interested, there's no legal reason that I'm aware of why people couldn't actually respond to those, but we've never had anybody in the state actually provide those services that I'm aware of.
Where do they come from? Where do the tickets, the machines?
The vendor community, Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, we contract out currently with Williams, which is a manufacturer out of Chicago and Las Vegas. IGT, which is International Gaming, is out of Las Vegas. And VLC, which was just bought out by IGT, is located in Bozeman, Montana. And that's our machine manufacturers right now. As far as the instant tickets, OGT's in their U.S. operation is in Texas. I think their international operation is out of Canada somewhere. And those are our primary vendors.
So it's not feasible to do a Oregon First on those type of activities?
I don't think it really is.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Representative Smith, we checked that out back in 1984. Nothing was even in the region.
Interesting. I had to ask.
I guess just a couple more comments that I had on our draft budget. Again, going back to the column that refers to indirect revenue, just so that's clear, the reason that's dropping is that's really, we're talking interest there, and that, not surprisingly, you'll see a change from 03 to 04 in that area. Salaries and benefits, you see roughly not too much change there, although, again, some savings there because we have fewer FTEs predicted in 04 than we had in 03. And I guess the final point I wanted to make about the 04 budget was when you look at the column other administrative expenses, you see a little over a $2 million change predicted between the 04 and the 03 budget. That's really, I think we're going to have time to get there. One of the things that the lottery obviously came under some criticism for was some of our administrative expense spending, and we'll talk about that in a little bit more detail, but that's some of the area. There was $800,000+ identified as some administrative savings we could have done by doing things differently. Some of that you'll see in the decrease in that particular line item because of some changes we've made at the Oregon Lottery that I'll talk about in a few minutes.
Representative Henson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question on the salaries and benefits. Are you covered by the governor's request for the pay freeze and the stopping of step increases, or is your compensation completely different?
Senator George, Representative Hansen, in terms of the director and the assistant directors, they certainly, I think, without question, would be covered by the governor's directive. I made a decision, though, as the director of the Oregon Lottery, and have conveyed this to the governor, that the rest of the Oregon Lottery, even though we're on a different compensation structure, will follow the rest of state government. So there aren't going to be any pay raises at the Oregon Lottery if there aren't pay raises with the other state agencies in state government during the next biennium.
Representative Smith.
I do apologize. I just have a lot of questions. Under travel expense, your lease vehicles, are those lease vehicles from the state motor pool, or are those lease vehicles from a separate?
What page are you on right now?
Page 4.
Page 4, okay.
Supplemental schedule of service and supplies expense.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, they're not from the state motor pool.
Quick follow-up question.
Certainly.
What's the rationale for not using the state motor pool and leasing your own vehicles?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I'm not sure that I can answer that question today. I think it's a good question. I can just tell you that Ms. Seelock and I have had that discussion already, and I think that is certainly an area that we intend to check into as we put together the 04 budget in final form.
I guess my observation is it's not a large amount of money, but we do have a motor vehicle pool with a lot of vehicles that are sitting around, and there's an opportunity for the state lottery to find a potential savings.
That brings up another question. About 4 or 5 years ago, there was concern when some vans were bought and were converted from a two-wheel drive to four-wheel drive. I see heads nodding. What is the condition of those things? Because I had a friend of mine who does that sort of thing and said he just thought that was a horrible idea. And particularly when I asked the question, what percentage of all the lottery sales are either on the Coastal Corridor or the I-5 Corridor, and it was like 85%, which would hardly ever require any four-wheel drive. Have we thought that through, and where are we now relative to those kind of vehicles?
I don't know. You drive 101 very often. You could use a four-wheel drive to get
through that. Well, it's not really close.
Get through the slides.
Yeah. I think Ms. Seelock is going to answer that from her past life.
Chair George, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colleen Seelock, and I'm the Assistant Director for Support Services at the Lottery. As Brenda noted, I've been there 11 days. But in my prior life as the director of operations at DAS, one of the functions I was responsible for was the state motor pool. I could give you the story where those vans currently are. They've all been moved over to surplus. Surplus has put them on eBay, and I believe probably about 75% of them have been sold. I cannot. I was not there. I was not at DAS at the time that those purchases were made by the lottery. I was actually at the elections division. So I'm not quite sure what the reasoning was, why they decided to go to four-wheel drive. Those vans were used for our retail service technicians who are in the field that travel around. The number of four-wheel drives a lottery currently has is very, very limited. We have all-wheel drive Chevrolet Astro vans that we use now. All those vans are outfitted much like a technician or service. They have bins in them. They carry extra video monitors, etc. But we have gone to all-wheel drive and not four-wheel drive. So the state has disposed of most of those vehicles, and they were one of the surprise success stories on eBay. They sold very extremely well, and so the state was able to minimize the dollars lost on that individual purchase.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Morris.
I have a question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the balance sheet, the current liabilities, the current asset to current ratio, or current assets to current liability ratio, is certainly reasonable from a business standpoint. I wonder, what is the economic development liability of approximately $71 million?
Mr. Chairperson, committee members, as we are selling tickets and making money for the state, we put that amount, it is actually due to the economic liability fund, and we put that as we earn it in a liability account. And then once a quarter, we make an estimated transfer payment of what we feel we have earned in the past quarter. And then following through at the end of the year, when we close our books and, you know, have our audit and everything, if there's anything that remains after those quarterly transfer payments, then we make one final annual transfer. So that liability, what you'll see if you go through our books is that at the beginning of the quarter it's very low, and it will build to the end of the quarter prior to making the payment, and then it will go down again. Okay, so it's just a quarterly cycle.
What's behind my thought process is with respect to the policy of the commission for cash balances, and are the cash balances in excess of what would be, you know, you might look at it on the basis of operating a little thinner and advance funds, thinking about, you know, where we are here and funding education in particular. If there's an opportunity for an additional advancement of funds based on,
as a matter of fact,
a more conservative, or maybe possibly too conservative, cash balance policy. And that's what's behind my question.
There one point to that question. As I said, we are transferring that on a quarterly basis, and that is a large chunk of what it is, the component of our transfer. The amount that's left as you go through the year will build a little bit. And we recently just, with the LFO office, we have about $8 million that is sitting in that liability account that would normally be transferred at the end of the year, but we've offered it up should they need it before the close of the biennium.
Thank you.
We have a question from Representative Smith. We'll come back to Senator Carter. And then,
okay. Thank you, Chair George. On your aging of accounts receivable, actually, let me digress. Again, I compliment you folks on these financial statements and providing us with information that's readable. On the aging of the accounts receivable, on the allowance for doubtful accounts, I actually have two questions. One, I'd be interested in knowing if we charge an interest expense or if there's a penalty for those folks who aren't paying. On the other hand, I'm curious on the current receivables. Do we have a reward system in place for early on-time payment? Because there is an opportunity for the state of Oregon to generate additional revenue if someone pays in the first 3 days that they receive the bill, because then the state has the ability to capture that interest for a longer period of time.
There were two questions that I heard there.
Right.
The first one being, let me go to the last one as far as incentive programs. Our retailers, it is a CFO's dream. We don't actually cut invoices to retailers. Everything is electronic. And we have what we call the 4-day program and the 11-day program, which is a contractually determined time after the close of a week when we go in and sweep the money that is due us. Okay, so we're talking about after the close of a week, within, depending upon your contract, 4 or 11 days collecting that money. So I think we pushed it forward just about as far as we can.
Okay.
And then, I'm sorry, could you repeat the other part of your question?
Chair George, on the allowance for doubtful accounts, 537 million thousand. Is there an interest expense penalty?
For any retailer that has been put on a payment plan, yes. Yes, we would charge them interest.
Just one follow-up, just so I can wrap this up. At what point do you write off that account? And if you do write it off, what's the procedure to protect the state?
It's a fairly extensive procedure. For any retailer that has got an amount that's due that they don't either set up on a payment plan, and we collect, we use the state collection agency. They're transferred over to state collection agency, and efforts are made at that level. Occasionally, we will also send them to Treasury for any collection against any potential tax refunds. So we have two ways that we will try to collect the money then, and then at the recommendation of the collection agency or Department of Treasury, if it is determined that that money is just not going to be collectible, depending upon the amount, we have a little latitude to make that write-off ourselves under $5,000 at the lottery. Then we have to get approval from the Secretary of State to write any of those amounts off.
A bankruptcy won't expunge the...
It could. Typically, if it's a large enough one, though, we're going to try to coordinate with the Secretary of State on that and just let them know, you know, what's going on.
Thank you. Senator Carter, then back to Representative.
In the unclaimed dollars area, in the area of unclaimed dollars,
mm-hmm.
How long by law can you keep those in unclaimed category before you start taking that money and putting it into your general fund? Or is that explain that process?
If I'm understanding your question correctly, prizes stay in a liability account for a year, at which point then they go into the unclaimed, you know, money which is due to the state, and then we, with our normal quarterly transfer, remit that money into economic development fund after the 1 year period.
Well, two questions. One, I was under the understanding that unclaimed lottery prizes went to the common school fund. Is that?
The unclaimed prizes are a remittance that we make to the economic development fund, and that's where lottery fulfills their obligation to remit the money to the state. Now, what happens after that point, I have to apologize, I get a little fuzzy on, because I don't manage that money.
Okay. The other question is, obviously, our role, and this is pretty much an informational-based meeting, but certainly our role in this economic crisis that the state's in is to just sniff for any kind of money we can find anywhere. And so I look at your retained earnings with a great deal of glee and avarice. Now, I'm assuming that that's money that's being set aside. Is that being set aside for purchase of the terminals to avoid the lease payments?
And pretty much anything that hasn't been set aside has been remitted back to the state of Oregon. We gave them $20 million that was not earmarked for those video lottery terminals. Part of last fiscal year, most of it this fiscal year, so that, you know, we were giving back anything that wasn't earmarked and needed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the total that the Lottery Commission has provided this biennium is over $50 million. And these were dollars in excess of the amount that they were obligated to provide.
Mm-hmm. And you should be complimented for that. The question is, can we get a little more?
I'm being directed by the director to say no.
But certainly,
I'm going to let her take the remainder of that question.
And that, just a thought, if there was any way to reevaluate that $75 million in terms of, is it excessive? And I don't mean excessive and negative, but based on your actual plans for replacement, is there any potential that an amount of that could
let me clarify one thing. You're seeing a $75 million number on that balance sheet. There are two components to that number. I'm going to just speak in rough numbers because I don't have the paper in front of me. There's about 42 of that that is actually cash. The remainder of that is non-liquid in that represents property, plant, and equipment. So I just want to make sure that you're not focusing on the 75. You need to focus on the 42.
Okay.
And that is the video, you know, the money that has been identified as being needed to do the aging video lottery terminal replacement program.
Thank you.
No,
it was joking.
Oh. Here, we can lease some of your non-liquid assets.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the purchasing leasing liquid.
No.
Bond them.
If we own it, we can bond it, yes.
One thing about this legislation, they know how they pass the bond. Yes.
I do have a question. At some point, can we get a list of what all is included in other administrative expenses? Because he is in here someplace and I haven't stopped over it yet. It doesn't have to be today.
I'm going to point you to a page in one of your handouts because you can see the details there. An elusive page. I'll get there in a second. Okay. It's page 22 and 23.
But other administrative expenses is
does this mean that all of the above travel office, all of these on 22 and 23 explains the subsequent $13 million that we were just talking about for other administrative expenses, all of these categories? Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, yes.
Okay.
Chair Carter. Thank you. Between now and the closing of your presentation, can you spend a little bit of time talking about how you work to develop and enhance your relationship with your service providers, who are your retailers and restaurants and bars and those type of establishments, because I think it's very important that there be a very, very solid partnership between those folks, and perhaps I would hope you could share with me in the past how that relationship has been nurtured, if you will, and what input and advice you can get from them. Not right now, but just as you go through your presentation, I hope you keep that in mind.
Sure.
and I shall now stay quiet. until the next question.
You can't imagine how it drives you crazy to be chair where you can't ask all this stuff. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I will come back to that question because I think it is important. Let me turn next, though, to a question that Senator Carter raised early, and I said I would definitely get here during the course of our presentation because this is an area that's very important to the Oregon Lottery in terms of the our problem gambling education and treatment. And as I think has already been mentioned, by law, the Oregon legislature has set aside 1% of net lottery revenues dedicated to the prevention and treatment of any emotional and behavioral problems related to gambling. And what that equates to is about $7 million, as you saw from an earlier slide during the course of the 2001-2003 biennium. In addition to the funds that are set aside for treatment, the Oregon Lottery spends an additional $650,000 per year on our problem gambling education program, where we actually make certain that individuals are aware of the fact that there is this gambling treatment program available to them. So it's actually a...
Could I point something out? The 1% of net lottery revenues that are dedicated to gambling addiction treatment are allocated to the Department of Human Services, and the services are provided through contracts with local service providers. So I think there are two pieces to this. One is the $7 million, which is a lottery fund allocation. The other are services provided through the Lottery Commission.
Mr. Chairman, questions are rather... Robin, and since we have decided through the Department of Human Services to cut out our addiction and drug abuse programs, how would that affect this money that is coming from the lottery to DHS?
During the Senator Carter, during the 2000, during the various special sessions that we've had, some of the funding, I can't remember. Around 700,000, I think. 1.2. Thank you, Cora. 1.2 million of that, those funds were reduced. That was, but these funds, just answer the second part of your question, these funds are purely for gambling addiction treatment programs and are not linked to other types of addiction programs.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up. Mr. Robin, in the event that a behavioral agency is receiving money for gambling addiction and the money is coming direct from the lottery, then the state cannot go in and withdraw those dollars for that purpose since they are dedicated?
Yes and no, Senator Carter. It is a statutory dedication, so the legislature could choose to eliminate that statutory dedication for gambling addiction and use those funds for some other purpose. But right now, the dedication of that 1% is to gambling addiction programs and not to any other type of treatment.
One of the questions,
Chairman. Mm-hmm.
Did we, through the five subsequent sessions that we have, did we at any point reduce those dollars?
Yes, that's
the 1.2.
That's a 1.2, Senator.
George, you've got the prevention treatment dollars and you've got the education dollars that are directly to the state. Do you have any figures on what gambling costs families as far as lost jobs, can't pay the mortgage, vehicles that you can't pay? There's got to be a huge impact. Do we have any measurement of that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think that the Department of Human Services probably has some of those numbers since they're the folks that are providing the direct treatment.
Get that for us so we have it.
Yes. The other figure I guess I wanted to bring to your attention, because you may have seen it recently in the news, is that in 2002, enrollment in gambling treatment increased by 43.3%, which is a is a figure that, that we think at least in part is a result of the money that the Oregon Lottery has spent on our education program to let people know that that treatment is available throughout the state.
Do you increase spending in 2002?
Okay. Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, I'm being advised that it's held pretty steady for the past 3 or 4 years.
Challenge your conclusion that it was the result of the spending and notification of people, and rather that as times are getting bad, people are gambling more, and therefore that we are actually seeing a spike in the addiction rates.
Well, I don't know that the figures bear out, though, the spike in the addiction rate. But is that, Carol, do you want to address?
I can clarify what DHS has credited for the increase. If you want me to speak to that.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is Carol Bono, marketing manager at the Oregon Lottery. Last year, there was a National Council on Problem Gambling made an award to the state of Oregon for our efforts, and it was really noted as a collaborative effort between DHS and outreach programs that were provided by the lottery. And in some recent materials, Jeff Murata, who is the manager of the treatment program at DHS, credited a new campaign that was created by the Oregon Lottery last year for a significant portion of that increase. So although our dollars spent did not change, our approach and our messaging changed, and we did see a dramatic jump in number of calls the first month that that campaign went on the air. So that was really, from DHS's perspective, a big contributor to the number of people that increased their calls for treatment.
Percentage of the gambling addicted people who are gambling on the state system were treating?
Mr. Chair, committee members, that's actually information that Jeff compiled into a report that we could get that information to you, because we do have the number of estimated gamblers, and we know how many people have been treated and how many hours. So I don't have those numbers in front of me, but those are available.
Percentage. I mean, as we talk about going deeper and deeper into video kinds of things, I mean, you actually have statistics that show you, if we go to line games, what percentage of the people who the increase players will become addicted, don't you?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I am not aware that there are any studies available that speak specifically to differences between video poker and line games and addiction. Again, that's something that Jeff Murata may have more information on that we can ask him that question.
Usage of video terminals. I mean, the reason that we talk about going, and the commission talks about going to line games, is because of the increased revenue, which means increased usage of the terminals. And I just assume that we have numbers. Maybe as an agency, you just deal in what the statute says you need to deal with and don't go beyond that.
In line with Senator's question, though, while lottery is here, so we can see the connection, because I think this is a very, very critical area for our state. Maybe we can have Mr. Murata come in and speak to some of the questions that are being asked. Is that possible? He's with DHS.
Right. But we're going to have a report also.
Yes, well, we'll give you the information that Jeff Murata had provided. I know he has a lot of analysis on the current trend of when people have a problem with a particular type of game. He has statistics on that are compiled from people who go to treatment. So I do know that the most prevalent game is video poker, isn't slots. So whether that's relevant or not, those are all things that Jeff probably has a better answer for than the lottery.
Fascinating. Shortly after we started video poker, at some of the testimony that we had in another committee.
John Lem's committee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Were you there as well?
I was there.
About the connection between the music that is played on, I probably shouldn't name names, but some of the video games that kids are playing, the similarity in the music there and the music that is used in the video. Yeah, and some of the addictive to some types of personality, some of the addictive things of the graphics and the music. It was impressive, obviously. Mm-hmm. Well, remember.
We remember it.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
We have that budget for human services right now. But that is not an issue that actually comes up. I don't know where it comes up. Mm-hmm. But it just seemed appropriate to this committee, since lottery is here, because all they serve as is a conduit to give them money.
Yeah.
You know. But
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I might suggest, at some point we will have the lottery allocation bill in front of us, which is the bill that spends the money generated by the lottery commission. It may be appropriate at that time to have a brief discussion about problem gaming. I'll make a note of that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay. Thanks very much.
Mr. Chair, if I could just make, I guess, two follow-up comments. One, I would direct the committee's attention again to our strategic plan. And on page 8 of that plan, one of the strategic objectives that the commission has set out is in that first column there, but it does direct that the Oregon Lottery will avoid deliberate methods to prolong play, such as increased speed of play, excessive graphic stimuli, or excessive interactivity, and that we will factor in the potential impact on problem gambling behavior when we select games and features. So that is an objective of ours, to keep that in mind as we select games and vendors and consider the types of games that will be played at the Oregon Lottery. And the final point I guess I want to make that's really on the slide is that we do train our retailers on warning signs and suggestions for intervention if they see any type of problem gambling activity. And maybe, Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, this is a place for me to make a couple comments about our retailers. They're obviously a critically important partner with the Oregon Lottery and the state of Oregon, for that matter, in terms of games, both traditional lottery products and video lottery. We simply can't do the job without them selling our products and raising revenue on behalf of Oregon. And in terms of how we partner with them, I think the fact that our sales have continued to increase speaks highly of the effective working relationship we've had with our retailers over the course of the years. I think we provide a lot of information to them about how they're doing in terms of sales. The sales staff is available to them. We do have the hotline service so that they can call and we can try to work them through problems or send dispatch technicians if that's necessary to do. In the past, we've had retailer forums where we've met with retailers and have discussed issues with them that are facing them and the lottery. I think in the past, and it may be the case as we roll into a new contract period with retailers in terms of commission rates, that the Lottery Commission has not just gone ahead with that and made a decision. We've had meetings throughout the state where we've gotten input from the retailers on what a reasonable rate of return is and that they could provide input to us on the, you know, the impact that the lottery has had on their business and what a change in the commission rate structure would be. And I would expect that we would continue that dialogue with the retailers.
Representative Smith. Question in regard to that, as many of our commissions throughout the state have members who participate in the industry themselves. On your commission, are any of your commissioners retailers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, no.
I just to follow up, one commission that comes to mind with me is the Oregon Wheat Commission, in which several members of the commission are wheat farmers. I think it would be a good idea on the Oregon State Lottery Commission to at least have one member who is a direct on-the-grounds participant of the programs, and perhaps there's a conflict and it can't be done, and if that's the case, I respect that. But then perhaps there's a role for an advisory committee. I just think there's an important linkage that needs to be made.
Certainly.
In the couple minutes I have remaining, let me just make a couple comments about the audits that have been done during the last biennium. I don't have really much to say about, we've had two financial audits done. There were no material findings in either of those audits. We had a video lottery security audit done. Again, you can see what the overall finding was there. Every year by law, or every other year by law, we have a security audit done. You can see that our overall score increased from a 7.4 during the last audit to an 8.3 out of 10 this past year, and the finding was we'd made a measurable improvement. I would like to spend a couple minutes on the administrative expense audit, which really drew all of the controversy last fall and really into the first part of this year in terms of some expenses that were questioned. And really what the Secretary of State Audit Division recommended is that we reduce expenses in four key areas: meetings, travel, training, and cell phones. And in terms of all of those areas, we've essentially now taken the recommendation of the Secretary of State and have made those changes that have been recommended. In terms of meeting expenses, they asked us to take a look, or recommended that we stop having food at the meetings, that we not have annual meetings, or that we not have annual meetings that are so expensive, and that we stop renting rooms off-site when we can either have meetings at the Oregon Lottery or at other state agencies. And in all of those areas, we've essentially stopped the practice entirely. We will not be having an annual meeting this at least this next year because of the budget circumstances, and we simply have just cut those expenses, I think, to the bone, as recommended by the Secretary of State audit. In terms of training, I would tell the committee members that at the time of the audit, the Secretary of State found that the lottery was spending $1,550 per employee on training. And they noted that other state agencies were at that time spending an average of $602 per employee. And we have drastically changed that. We've gone even below the 602, which other state agencies were spending. In this next budget cycle, we're looking at a figure of roughly $300 per employee, given the current budget crisis and what we expect that other state agencies will be forced to do as well.
And that's per year?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Carter.
Can you tell me if you're cutting the employees short for excellence in their jobs by going 50% lower, are you putting them at risk in terms of their knowledge base? And then, because the state operates in a funny way, that if people are incompetent, they give you hell. And if you spend too much money to train them, they give you hell. So are you selling your employees short by cutting by, 50%?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, that's obviously a key concern, because we obviously, we're required to raise revenue, and in doing so, we have to have highly trained employees to carry out the mission of the Oregon Lottery. But I don't think so. I think one of the things we're looking at is everybody recognizes we're in a severe budget crisis at this point in time. So we're looking at this as we roll into the budget cycle as a figure that we want to look at per employee. It may very well be that we have employees in IT would be a situation where that particular employee in that area to carry out his or her job really does need more than the $300 allocated, and it may be that somebody else doesn't need training this particular year. Doesn't mean they won't get it the following year. So it's not something that we're going to put such tight reins on it that we can't carry out our mission, but I just think it's something that, given the current budget crisis, we just really need to be sensitive to and make sure that at least at this point in time we're not overspending in that particular area.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Certainly.
See, my concerns would be that
you're a very fine financial person who's put such good records together here. I wouldn't want her to ever get into an Enron situation. So will the dollars be available for her to have the training that she needs? Or our security department, with the potential of crime being raised as it is and underground activity, whether he's getting the kind of training that he needs. Those first three areas concern me more than the meetings, training, travel, cell phone. None of those can get out of line. Don't get me wrong, and we should check on them. But I worry in the top three areas if you're going to have what you need to get those people trained to continue to be the agency that applies excellence to its its business plans and strategies for the state.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, obviously those are all concerns that we're in the process of discussing as we roll through the budget cycle, and all of those are things we'll be taking a look at to make certain that the lottery employees get the training they need. But again, I think we just need to be frugal, particularly for the next couple of years.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. The reason I was concerned in those areas is I think sometimes the news media mm-hmm. can carry us out into areas that seem like, you know, the world is coming apart. And then when our agencies try to respond, mm-hmm. as you know, you can look at DHS and some things that have happened over there in terms of what happened to outside or external forces mm-hmm. that make them change. And when they change, then something else goes loose or haywire in the other area. And it's like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And it just appears to me that the lottery has done an excellent job over the years. And not that any of us don't want to continue to do better, but sometimes media frenzy can cause us to do things that are not necessarily in our best interest. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Senator Carter. But I tell you, when the average person, 350,000 Oregonians living in poverty and 157,000 Oregonians unemployed, and they hear about some luxury living and
yes,
travel expenses, they have a right to be concerned. The other thing is, Director, it appears to me that your mission statement would cover the fact that you're responsible to balance those issues. When you look at the
yes.
highest standards of integrity and security and maximum profits to people, you're going to balance that.
Yes, sir. I agree with that. I think we have to.
Senator Dukes?
In a normal situation, which I understand you haven't been in lately, but in a normal situation, what's your employee turnover?
I can tell you that we have a goal of not, I want to say it's not more than 10%.
Professional conference data. That's right.
It's a hot mess this year.
Well, I'm not finding it right now. But the
I was interested overall, and then I was more specifically interested in the folks who do your video terminal maintenance and those technicians as to what the turnover was, because it seems to me the 300 and some is an average. And you never intended to train everybody
right.
in any given year anyway.
Yes.
And so I was particularly interested in those where if you don't have the, I mean, I know that we don't really determine your budget, that the commission does. So if you were to suddenly have a large turnover in the technical support folks, you got to get them trained.
Certainly.
Let me raise a question relative to travel, because I had a former constituent in my old district who commented to me that he was aware of some of our technicians who were down on the coast, and when they came over, that they actually spent the night in the finest hotels, bought the most expensive food, and he was really offended by that. And I said, it really offended me, because when I go over there, I stop at McDonald's and drive home at night. And so if the senator could do it, you know, the thought being is maybe our staff could be more frugal with, you know, some of their money, too. Can you kind of address that, whether that had credibility or not?
Well, in terms in terms of the we now have a new travel policy in place that was approved by the commission, again, about a month ago, that really does change the travel practice at the Oregon Lottery and puts us in line with the way the rest of state government travels. So it used to be, particularly when we went out of state, that lottery traveled with an expense system that's actual and reasonable. And now we're under a per diem system, so whatever the per diem rate is for a particular location is what the lottery employee will be paid. The same is true in-state travel. Whatever anybody else in state government is getting for in-state travel is the same amount that the lottery employee is getting. So generally at locations, the cap's going to be $55 a night for lodging and $30 a day for meals, because that's what it is for the rest of state government. And that's the policy in place. Now, there are obviously, you know, some cities in Oregon that have a slightly higher rate because of the location, but that's the policy in place now.
Well, just a statement. Obviously, training is very important to any agency. The one thing that we probably will never be able to do is legislate judgment. And I'm very pleased with the changes that are occurring. Yeah, you need to train people to get the job done, but by the same token, if there's an article on the front page of the Oregonian describing what the training includes, and we have to be able to look at it and still be real proud of what we're doing and making the logical connection between the expenses and the benefit that the state's getting from that. And it's mostly a judgment question. And I'm very, very pleased with the changes that have been occurring, and I think they'll continue.
Thank you. And unless there are some additional questions about the administrative expense audit, why don't I stop there? And if there are any additional questions, I'd be happy to try to answer those.
I'm an educator. I firmly believe in education. And what will you do in terms of what I consider the most dramatic example that the media could have presented in terms of a person taking classes to enrich themselves in your program?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, that our education policy is one that it really, I think, within the next couple weeks, we will probably have a final draft. Let me just tell you that I, too, am strongly in favor of education, but one of the things that I think that we have to balance at the Oregon Lottery is the fact that some of the criticism we came under from our education program was not that we had an education program in place, but there really have been no caps on that in terms of how much an employee can spend on the education program. With other state agencies, there are some upper limits, maybe $2,000 a year, those type of things, and at the Oregon Lottery, there's simply been no cap. The other thing we came under criticism, though, for is that some of the classes then did not seem to be classes that were really going to further the lottery's interest. So there was, I think one of the examples they pointed to was a class on rock and roll and those type of things that employees took as electives to further their education and get a diploma, but that was one of the things that was criticized in the audit.
I am, as an educator, a 30-year counselor in the college system. I'm offended by that, because if a person is getting a BA degree in accounting procedures,
right,
they still have to have elective courses. And if they choose rock and roll, who in the hell business it is, since it's a part of completing that degree requirement. And yes, you might have been criticized for it, but if you get to the point where you're going to determine what kind of classes people take for their electives, I think you're totally out of line.
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, though, I guess that my response to that, though, is one of the things that one of the directions I was going with that, though, is that there There are some requirements in the law, though, that in terms of where lottery, what lottery dollars can be spent on, and I think that may, to some extent, distinguish us from other state agencies, that we really do have to be able to draw a justification in the expenditure of lottery funds, tying it back to the mission of the Oregon Lottery. And I think that may be a distinction that I want to look at to determine if that's really a legal way that we can spend the funds, given those statutory and constitutional restrictions on where lottery dollars can be spent.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. I'm not here to kill the messenger. I'm here responding to the outcry in the media.
Mm-hmm.
Because an education in America requires so many credit hours in a person's major concentration, so many in their minor concentration, and then others that will enhance the individual's knowledge, understanding, social aptitude in America. That's what it is. And if the lottery says that we're going to help you to enhance your abilities to get a degree, to be a better accountant, I'm just picking on you today because you're fine, obviously doing a fine job in your arena, so forgive me for using a financial asset. But even as a financial advisor or financial expert, they have so many hours within that degreed area to do that. Now, and then my question would come to you and to the commission, are you going to determine what, if any, hours are going to be paid for by the agency in terms of those classes that would enhance the individual along with the classes that's going to enhance the agency? And how do you break that out? That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Senator George, Senator Carter, I hear what you're saying, and I still think it comes back to me to really two issues. One is not that that's not an appropriate part of somebody's education, because it clearly is. It's really a question, though, of whether taxpayer dollars should be spent for that particular class, and really whether lottery dollars can legally be spent for that particular class. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, before the committee leaves here, we do need to remind everyone, and what did I just do with it? Right here. Tomorrow, we will be meeting between at 9 o'clock, rather than our typical time, which is close to 9 o'clock.
And you have two agendas there.
Is there anything further to come before the committee? If not, we'll close the informational meeting on the Oregon State Lottery. With a tap, the gavel will be adjourned.
That's right.